Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Welcome back. Third quarter of the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Dustin Hawkinsmith. This segment brought to you by GoPSURV.com, where they've got a special Keystone Sports RV that you got to check out, complete with all kinds of stuff we talk about on the show, 409 Tailgate Club stuff, Labatt Blue beer, tailgate wine. We're talking to Tyler Donahue from Lions 247, as promised. One more segment, just looking back at App State, Tyler, and what just your general takeaway, your thought, your feeling coming from that game, 45-38, Penn State wins it in overtime.
I don't think I've ever seen a fourth quarter quite like what we saw on Saturday. 42 total points, and 28 of them scored by App State, of course. And I'm sure that's going to be what we're all focused on, the fact that Penn State, when they needed to make really just one stop, and midway through the fourth quarter, if they come up with one defensive stop, they have a chance to really put that game away. And three straight drives in, about 10 minutes of game action, App State goes touchdown, touchdown, touchdown. In terms of the early developmental signs of a defense that has a lot of new contributors, and obviously kind of the faith in this defense moving ahead a little bit, that certainly was shaken. It was hard to believe that going into the fourth quarter it was 24-10, and by the end of it, Penn State needed to put up 38 points just to send the thing into overtime.
Yeah, I think it was something not a lot of people really expected. It seemed like on a couple of occasions, like you said, Penn State was ready to get in the driver's seat in this game. Just what about in general, the offense, the defense? You knew that there was a lot of new pieces to the puzzle, and it seemed like they were pretty intent on getting a lot of those new pieces time, and that the rotation stuck around, all the way through for most of the 60 minutes. Just what was your take on the number of guys that they used and their ability, I guess, over time to maybe get in sync with more of those pieces?
Yeah, I was surprised, a guy like Nick Tarburton out there getting reps. I'm not surprised we saw P.J. Mustafer, but there was a couple series there where Micah Parsons was the guy, outside linebacker, and Kola Farmer came off the field, and we certainly saw some really good flashes. It was kind of what you'd anticipate, I think. Some of these guys on a certain play say, wow, he has all the tools. You can see why there's excitement there. And then other plays with some of these younger players, whether it's freshmen or redshirt freshmen, they end up out of place. They're chasing down plays that cost the team yards. I will say, looking over on the offensive side of the football, a little bit surprised that we did not see Jahan Dotson, considering, how much talk there was surrounding him in training camp. But Ricky Slade got plenty of reps. We saw Pat Freiermuth out there at tight end. I think what ultimately stood out to me is two first-year contributors on the offensive side of the football. We're going to see a lot of K.J. Hamler. We're going to see a lot of Ricky Slade. And without those two guys, it could have been pretty ugly against App State because, quite frankly, they came up with big plays exactly when Penn State needed those big plays. We didn't necessarily see that happen from some of the older players on the offense. And, Trace McSorley, of course, he was the major X factor that you'd expect him to be. They lose that game without having McSorley on the field. There's no doubt in anybody's mind, I think, coming out of that stadium, that if they don't have Trace McSorley, they're probably 0-1.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. And that fourth quarter throw to K.J. Hamler with guys bearing down on him from both sides, off his back foot, just a tremendous throw. For K.J. Hamler, how encouraging, how good is it to see somebody who has been talked about so much and who his raw skills, you can see it, you can see the speed, you can see the quickness, but the ability to rise to the occasion, and he just looked like he never blinked in this game. Even when the game really came down to the wire, it was him who created, really most of the key plays in this game, I felt like.
It was an emotional game for him. I didn't realize how difficult some of the periods of his comeback from ACL tear his senior year was. He talked about, this was after the game, he talked about, sitting in his room crying and just hoping to get a chance. And, after redshirting last year, there was so much talk. And I think, Franklin said this, I think McSorley said this, that he was definitely, a little bit more caged in, for the first half or so, not really doing the talking that he normally does. KJ said that's how he handles game day, it's, he says it's different than practice. Practice, he lets his mouth run free. But apparently, you know, they saw he needed to, you know, snap out of that a little bit and get the juices flowing and just be himself. And I think that's part of KJ. It is saying, hey, look, I'm a dynamic playmaker. I need to go take a risk. And on that kickoff return, which is what everybody's probably talking about on this Monday and heading into the week, you know, he didn't get the instructions that he's supposed to get from Jonathan Thomas. He's supposed to get either the signal to take a knee or to go. KJ took a moment there. Everyone in the stadium kind of groaned, thinking that it would end up very badly, maybe with Penn State pinned back in their own 10. Instead, KJ makes a man miss, makes another guy miss, shows off that speed down the sideline, and what a difference it made rather than starting, you know, inside your own 20 or even at the 25-yard line versus having, you know, a minute and 40 seconds or whatever they about what they had and only needing to go 48 yards. And then he comes up big on the back end of that series. So, yeah, I think KJ Hamler is going to take that momentum and confidence that he gained from the final stages of the contest. Would not surprise me after, at all to see him end up leading this team in receptions. I think he's that kind of talent.
This is the Keystone Kickoff Show talking to Tyler Donahue from Lions 247, the segment brought to you in part by Labatt Blue Beer. We talk about GoPSURV.com all the time. They were up there this past weekend giving out some free samples. Great stuff. You can always check them out. I think they'll be there at the GoPSURV lot more often, right? Okay. I'm getting a thumbs up on that one. I just wanted to make sure. Tyler, I think with KJ Hamler, you know, I think the big play threat is real. You know, I came into this game wondering where big plays were going to come from, wondering if Juwan Johnson, if he was going to evolve to bring that part of the game, wondering if, you know, what DeAndre Tompkins, what his role would look like. Could he maybe do that kind of thing? And really, in the end, it was KJ Hamler again and again, again and again. Where was DeAndre Tompkins?
Yeah, that was surprising because I think a lot of people were expecting a big boost in his production total. I think some were surprised that he didn't have more receptions last year. So you figure get him involved early. You know, Trace McSorley is a guy who he's not going to lock in on any receiver. We've seen that throughout his career. He's going to take what's available to him. He's going to go through his reads. He's going to have his safety valves on plays, very much like the Brandon Polk conversion on fourth down during that last drive. That was not his first option, but it was there for him. I don't know if it was something the defensive strategy was doing with Appalachian State. But yeah, DeAndre Tompkins obviously did not make the kind of noise you'd expect, nor did he do that as a punt returner. And then with Juwan Johnson, who you mentioned, you know, this guy has all the physical tools, all the measurements you look for. You talk about the NFL scouts salivating over his potential. You know, one touchdown last year, which was, you know, a big one. We haven't seen him, you know, take over a game necessarily. There was one series there, I believe it was early in the second half, where I think they got the ball to him three times on one possession. But aside from that, you know, it wasn't a consistent thing where, you know, Appalachian State was dealing with a monster at receiver. There were a few plays where maybe you'd like to see him be a little bit more assertive and use that physical presence. But yeah, I think there's certainly a little bit more question marks at the receiver position in the passing game in general, based off what we saw initially. But again, I think when you have a quarterback like Trace McSorley, you think you can get those things straightened out a little bit quicker on the practice field than you would if you had a kind of an inexperienced guy behind center.
What did you make of Miles Sanders and his debut as a starter, and then really the 1-2 punch, how special Miles and Ricky Slade can be? I know Mark Allen was sprinkled in there too, but really it looked like those two guys, both former five stars, I think are every bit as good as we expected them to be.
Yeah, I think the really encouraging thing was you didn't see these guys getting bottled up in the backfield. I mean, even if they were going down quickly, it was, you know, especially with Miles, he was, you know, falling forward. He was getting 2 or 3 yards. He wasn't, you know, losing 5 yards on a play. And that's a credit to the offensive line. But I think really with Miles Sanders, he did a nice job early running hard and just, you know, between the tackles, you know, no hesitation. And I think that was important to get his groove, and he was able to find some space. And I thought we learned a lot about where the coaching staff is with Miles Sanders. On that overtime drive, you give the ball to him 4 consecutive times. That tells you that you're going to trust his ball security at this point, because you're not going to put the football in the hands of a guy in overtime if you have concerns about fumbles. And then I think that just shows that they really think he can get it done in pressure situations. And, you know, 4 carries later, he found his way to the end zone for the second time. And then you throw in Ricky Slade, and it did not surprise me at all to see him bust a long distance touchdown. I think he's going to have several of these 20-plus yard touchdowns this year. Don't know how many, but I think we're certainly going to see a few. And with Ricky, the thing I'm really excited to see, and some people saw this during the game, is when this kid's in space, he is a very difficult player to bottle up for a defender one-on-one. And I think the key with Penn State is how can you get him in that space? I think I'd really like to see them make him a receiving outlet. And I think they're going to be able to do that. But yeah, these two complement each other really well. And then you got Mark Allen, who can certainly be a steady hand and a guy that can contribute in the passing game if needed, to spell. But I think it's pretty clear we're going to see those two, assuming the health is there, really emerge as the faces of this backfield. And it's not just going to be the Miles Sanders show.
How about let me switch to defense? We got a couple minutes left here. What's your biggest question coming out of that game where, you know, App State puts up 38 points?
I just think there just seemed to be some general disarray. Guys just, like I said, out of place and really trailing on the plays. I think they got to figure out what they want to do at linebacker. Quite honestly, I thought Jan Johnson had himself a pretty consistent game. I thought he made some nice stops in the run game. Micah Parsons, to me, I think just based on what we saw, small sample size, and yes, he was over-pursuing like we knew he would, and yes, there were moments where he was caught out of place, but I just think he has too much of a nose for the ball and too much of a potential to create a turnover to spend, extended time on the sideline. I know you don't want to rush him out there, but for me, that's going to be interesting. Like, how quickly are we going to see kind of a passing of the torch, maybe at linebacker with Micah Parsons coming on the field and maybe Koa Farmer coming off the field a bit more? It's a tough thing to do because you got a first-year guy versus a fifth-year guy, but it's something that college football programs face every year on the depth chart. So I think they're going to have some decisions like that across the board. And how long, what is your assessment of a guy like Ellison Jordan and Fred Hansard? And do those guys need to be on the rotation ahead of P.J. Mustafa, or does P.J. Mustafa get longer looks? I think those are the kind of things. When do you start to extend the leash a little bit for these freshmen and see what you got? Because, clearly the defense was lacking. Kevin Givens not being on the field was a big deal, but, not a ton of trench domination like we kind of heard from some of these players that they were anticipating getting after the quarterback a bunch and dominating, an offensive line. We didn't see that on Saturday. So I think, it's going to be interesting. I don't know which part of the field to dissect more because it's hard to blame, one position because other position may have been lacking and that hung them out to dry. I don't know what to make of that defensive secondary. They had some rough moments as well until the really good moment at the end of the game. But I just think there's a lot of disarray on defense and we'll see. They got to get some things clamped down because, Pitt's certainly going to be licking their chops if they're seeing scrambling like that.
Tyler Donahue from Lions 247. We are moving on here on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Ask Greg coming up after this.
It's time to own summer with Labatt Blue. To have a can't-do-this-anywhere-but-Pennsylvania summer. Hit the waters with paddles, backflips, cannonballs, and cap things off with a bonfire and Labatt Blue. Soak it in with Labatt Blue and Labatt Blue light-loving Pennsylvania cans, celebrating Pennsylvania's summer spots. While supplies last, beer Labatt USA, Buffalo, New York. Always enjoy responsibly.
Life gets complicated, and it only gets more complicated when things change, which is why AAA insurance agents take the time to talk with you so that they can help you choose the best auto and home coverage. Don't put off getting protected. Let AAA help cover what you care about. Insurance that's not just insurance. Talk to your local AAA insurance agent or visit AAA.com to learn more about AAA.
409 Tailgate Club proudly introduces our tailgate wines. Like our great sauces and rubs, you'll enjoy our wines at your next cookout, tailgate, or even as a great gift for that fan of the blue and white. Speaking of blue and white, you've got to try our award-winning Sapphire Blue made from pure blueberry juice. Or how about our Old Main Pinot Grigio and 1855 Vidal? Go to tailgatewine.com and find all our PA preferred wines. That's tailgatewine.com.